Oh boy.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message, two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
Nope, it's time for, oh boy, Too Wretched Radio.
It's a outrage how a gal gets a husband today.
The subject? Scandals. There are a number of them these days, and some of them are worthy of our attention, and some of them are not. Phil, a week or so ago, give or take, talked about some of the scandals that have bubbled up in evangelical Christianity, and I shared what I think are some rules when we talk about something that's a scandal and when we don't talk about things that are a scandal. So before we get into the scandals themselves, I want to share with you my little list of criteria. You affirm, deny them, or you add your own. Ready?
Okay.
All right.
Ready.
It has to be really juicy, and it's going to hurt somebody really, really bad. Wait, I'm second. Sorry. Wrong notes. That would be what the pagans would do. Number one, it needs to be a widely disseminated scandal. In other words, we don't gin it up. We don't forward the information. The evangelical community as a whole needs to be aware of it. That's criteria number one. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that.
All right. It also needs to be remembered that we don't know the full story, because we are from afar, so we need to be very thoughtful how we discuss it. Affirm or deny?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Absolutely true.
So rendering a judgment is not something that we can be doing from a distance, correct?
Usually that's true, yes.
No, yeah, I agree. You know, usually that's true, because it depends on if it's a he said, if anybody, there's an affirmation or denial of the accusations.
Right. I mean, if there's video of someone committing a heinous act or whatever, then
sure,
maybe you can make a judgment from afar. But generally speaking,
that's the way that it has to be.
Yeah. You go by the biblical standard is one or two witnesses, credible witnesses. And I try to be even a little more cautious than that, at least by saying what it takes to have a credible witness is a little bit higher standard than most people would think.
Next rule. If I can't contribute something that's helpful in some way, shape, or form, I don't need to be heard.
Yeah, in fact, this is maybe the most important rule you've named so far, and I would say I don't see any point in talking publicly about any scandal unless, especially if your purpose is just to spread the news of the scandal, then that's you know, scandal mongering. It's sinful. The only reason for talking publicly about some scandal like that is if you can shed some biblical light on the situation, or clarify something that's confusing, or you know, straighten out a wrong public perception that lots of people have. That happens frequently. It's often something that someone, especially someone in your position, Todd, who you have a large megaphone and lots of listeners and strong biblical opinions, it's often appropriate for you to talk about things that are in the news and scandalous in order to shed biblical light on something that maybe the mainstream media have confused, or there's a widespread confusion among evangelicals or whatever. That's a valid reason for discussing scandal. But just because you like, you know, titillating news or you know, really seamy stories about people, to just be digging up scandal all the time, that's actually a sinful pursuit.
All right. Are there any other rules you would add to my criteria?
Yeah, speak the truth in love. You have to be careful. And it's very tempting not to. When someone has disappointed you and it's come to light that someone you trusted has sinned and now it's a public scandal and all of that, it's very difficult to keep your own personal emotions out of it and be sure that what you're saying is speaking the truth in love and not out of resentment or anger or, you know, a bit of personal pique.
And I think right with that, kind of going back to one of the other criteria, is to not be picking horses in the race. We can do that. I mean, we literally have to just wait until some sort of verdict is rendered by some sort of court, if you will, before we can be making all kinds of, this guy is right, that girl is wrong, or whatever the instance is. I think we need to be very slow to make judgments.
Right, yeah. And particularly if the scandal involves someone with whom you've already been adversarial, it's a great temptation to take a little bit of, you know, Schadenfreude, at taking delight at the downfall of your...
I'm not surprised that he would do that type of an attitude, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Scripture forbids us to rejoice in our enemies' downfalls. We're not supposed to think that way. It's pretty hard, frankly, sometimes, but you have to certainly stifle yourself when you're speaking publicly about someone else's moral failure or scandal or whatever.
All right, so let us see if we can keep our own rules. There are three scandals, and Phil, quite honestly, you might just want to say, pass, I've got nothing to say, and then we'll just move on because we want to stick to the very rules that we've just said are kind of important. Let's start with sovereign grace. This story, I think most people are aware of it. Everybody's reporting it. And thanks to Rachel Den Hollander, this is the young lady who brought down Larry Nassar, if you recall.
Right.
And she made some comments to Christianity Today that there was a scandal inside of the church that she was a part of, which is Sovereign Grace Churches. And she felt that it was never correctly adjudicated, that it was never heard.
Yeah.
And the grievances were never addressed. All right. Sovereign Grace is saying, we're innocent. We did everything right. When these sex scandals, where they were reported, we dealt with them appropriately. Rachel is saying, I don't think that you did. Let's bring in a third party. Do you have anything to say or comment on regarding the Sovereign Grace, Rachel Den Hollander, let's call it scandal?
Yeah, and this is a big one. It's been protracted over a lot of time. And from the very start, people were demanding my comments on this. And I frankly have not known enough about it to say, yes, this person's guilty or that person's not. And I think one of the disasters early on is that this story was picked up by people who sort of automatically take every accusation at face value and promote it as if, you know, this is a fact, this is a credible witness, when in fact all you've really got there is an accusation. On the other hand, this thing actually did go to trial, and there were men convicted, men who had been in leadership in the Sovereign Grace Churches who were convicted of, you know, child molestation, pretty gross crimes. And
Well, those just to be clear, because Phil, I think you kind of alluded to this. This has been a very difficult story to follow. You know, all kinds of information. It just seems, and you know, even Sovereign Grace Churches, it's like, I'm not even sure where their headquarters is. It was a tough one to follow.
It was. And it wasn't clear who knew what and when and all of that. And that's the reason I agree with Rachel Den Hollander on this. There needs to be. Let me back up. So there were these court trials and everything. And at the time, the leadership of Sovereign Grace Churches were saying, we can't comment on this because it's currently in litigation.
Right.
Our lawyers have asked us not to comment. And so I pretty much stood with them on that and said, yeah, I mean, there's not enough information to be posting on the internet and passing around the sort of condemnation that some of these groups wanted to see and demanded to see from Christian leaders everywhere. But my assumption was once the trials are settled and the civil case was dismissed for over a technicality, a lack of, I think it had passed the statute of limitations or something. So it was dismissed without really resolving anything. And the expectation would be, okay, now the leadership of Sovereign Grace Churches is able to comment and explain what happened and why these things weren't dealt with apparently in a proper way. And yet, still, it's been nothing. There's been no news. So what Rachel Den Hollander is saying is there needs to be an independent investigation, and the facts on this need to come out. I agree with that. I think there are too many questions that remain unanswered. I've even, you know, been in touch with some of the people who are directly involved here, and I've seen emails and so on that suggest that this was not just a localized thing. There was a kind of widespread knowledge that this was going on, and it doesn't seem to me that it was properly dealt with. In fact, it seems self-evident that this was not properly dealt with within the hierarchy of leadership at the time. Not that they committed any crimes or need to be, you know, put in prison or whatever, but there are some questions that still need to be answered. And so I think in this case, because so much has been written and so much has been said and so many people have legitimate questions, there really needs to be an independent investigation and the facts need to be brought forward.
This is going to hurt me maybe as much as it's going to hurt you, Phil. Christianity Today had a good article on this. Oh, ow. Even as I said it, a shooting pain through my kidney. Mark Galli wrote, I thought, a pretty balanced article stating, look, we're not saying anybody's guilty. We're not saying anybody's innocent. This cloud is hanging over evangelicalism. And he kind of pointed toward reformed circles because Sovereign Grace is, we'll call it reformed charismatic. Let's just remove the cloud. If there's complete innocence, we rejoice. If there isn't, we deal with it. But then we'd model for other churches how to deal when these situations come up. I actually thought he nailed it and followed the rules of discernment we discussed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, and it is a rare occasion when you can say this, that that Christianity Today article hit all the right notes. It sounded all the right tones, and I agree with it. I mean, look at it. This year at Together for the Gospel, originally C.J. Mahaney, who was sort of the visible head of that whole organization, and so he's gotten a lot of the blame. How personally involved he was, I don't know. How much guilt really belongs to him, I would be reluctant to say at this point. But the scandal certainly has dogged him, and so much so that, and there were so many complaints that he withdrew, I think, graciously from T4G this year.
Yeah.
And so it's affecting, you know, something that large. The entire Together for the Gospel conference is affected by it and would have been affected by it whether he had stayed or whether he had withdrawn. And with so many lingering questions, I just don't see how anybody can say, no, we don't need any further investigation of this.
If this is speculative to the point of gossip and not being beneficial, then just tell me. It seems to me, considering all you described, the implications for Together for the Gospel, no small deal, the rumor mill that's grinding away with these stories. If Sovereign Grace does not at some point deal with this, because I know they're having a skirmish, who's the proper investigator, who's really independent, Boz Chavijian, no, we don't want him. But at some point, can we, as we watch this, say, render a verdict against Sovereign Grace because they refuse to deal with it, which would imply that there were actually some things that were not handled correctly?
Well, I'm reluctant to, like, publicly state a verdict that impugns so many men who actually have my respect for their teaching and their influence and certain things that they've done and said. And yet, I have to agree, if the truth doesn't come out, then there is a cloud over their heads that actually disqualifies them because they're not above reproach. And since that's the first requirement for church leadership, that a man has to be above reproach. And because there's this reproach hanging over them right now, and maybe or maybe not, I don't know whether it's their fault that there's this reproach that's attached to its name, to their name. But one way or the other, they have the power to lift that reproach if there's nothing to hide. Let's bring the facts out and let the truth be known. And if the reproach sticks, then we have to follow the consequences. If the reproach is lifted, then this is something that should have been done a long time ago.
Scandal number two involves Willow Creek Association, specifically Pastor Bill Hybels. He's on the brink of retirement, and it would seem that there are some of his members who are making accusations. I think they're calling it hashtag church too, that he has been inappropriate historically with some women. Those are the accusations, widely disseminated story that's made all of the larger tabloids, including Christianity Today. They're claiming he said things, he implied things. He is categorically denouncing it. Now, Phil, I suspect you're not a big fan of Bill Hybels.
No.
Would you like to comment on this particular scandal?
Yeah, I don't know enough on this one to render any verdict one way or the other. It's intriguing because you've got, you know, seemingly credible people on both sides, some defending him and some accusing him. And this is one of those cases where, you know, as scripture says, you don't receive an accusation against an elder except with two or three witnesses. In other words, there has to be a very high level of evidence before you accept even an accusation against a pastor. Now, I struggle to even see Bill Hybels as a legitimate pastor. There are things he's done and said that have caused me for years to think this man should not be in leadership over a church, mostly doctrinal and philosophical issues. There was an incident back in the 1980s where he wrote an article that was published in Moody Monthly magazine about the problem of pornography and how to deal with it. And I don't know if you remember it, but James Dobson had been invited to sit on a panel talking about pornography and or investigating the threat of pornography. It was a presidential investigation called by probably Ronald Reagan. I don't remember. But it was an official sort of government investigation into the evil effects of pornography. So he'd had some experience with this, and Dobson had written quite a bit about it. And Hybels said in this article he wrote in Moody Monthly that he had discussed this with Dobson, and Dobson told him, if you're going to take on the issue of pornography, you need to know what you're up against. And so Hybels said he went and rented some pornographic films and showed them to his church staff. That in and right then and there, I said, this is a guy who I wouldn't trust. I mean, this is public data. This was published in Moody Monthly magazine at the time. It was
That's
shocking.
Crossing.
Right. And with that in my mind over all these years, I have to say, given the testimony out of his own mouth that Bill Hybels said he did this, I would say it doesn't surprise me if people on his staff feel that he said and did inappropriate things. He pretty much admitted to that back in 1980 or 80. I think this was 83.
Yeah, I would say hey, everybody, gather around. We're going to pop in a VHS disc. Wow.
It was unbelievable to me that James Dobson said that. I don't know if he really did, but then it was a surprise to me that Bill Hybels would actually write it in a public article, and most shocking to me that Moody Monthly would publish it.
Publish it. Right. Yeah. But what, Joey, what are they called? VHS cartridges?
Disc.
What disc? Is it, what are they? Whatever. Tape. The things that I'm still more comfortable with. All right, scandal number three. You brought it up. Well, I wasn't going to add this one, but so we'll make this 3.1. Moody Bible has been under a bit of a cloud as of late. Julie Royce,
alma mater.
Is that her name? Yeah, it's your alma mater.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of those instances where there's been some discussions that maybe some of the staff members there are not towing a theological line that's sitting the standard of orthodoxy. Now, they've initiated that everybody needs to sign the Chicago Statement, which I think pretty high bar to make sure that they believe Scripture is sufficient, inerrant, infallible, etc. Is Moody out from underneath the cloud? Are they doing okay?
I don't think so. You know, in all candor, I love Moody Bible Institute, and it's one of the few schools that managed to stay conservative, evangelical for more than a century. But it seems like when they hit the century mark, they begin to hit the skids as well, doctrinally. And I just don't see. I mean, when I was a student at Moody, the inerrancy of Scripture was already part of the required doctrinal statement. I mean, if you were even squishy on the issue of inerrancy, you didn't teach at Moody, and you wouldn't graduate from there even. And Moody had men involved in the drafting of the Chicago Statement back when it was drafted in the late 70s. And in fact, at the time, I think John MacArthur was a board member at Moody, and There was no question in those days of whether Moody held to the principle of biblical inerrancy. So why they felt obliged now to make a big public deal out of this, as if this is some new thing for Moody, it concerns me. I fear it's mostly cosmetic, because I don't see them actually taking steps to alter the makeup of the faculty in a way that I think is taking them back towards a more conservative position. It concerns me.
I sure hope it moves in the right direction. You'd hate to see that institution become liberal.
I do too, but it's not an easy thing. I can't think of more than one example of a school that had begun the slide, you know, away from biblical inerrancy and towards some more liberalizing ideas, and then returned. The only exception to that rule is Southern Seminary with Al Mohler's influence. And in fact, I spoke with Dr. Mohler about this with Moody, and I said, what they need is another Al Mohler, but I don't see one on the horizon.
Yeah, they definitely need, not, you know what, and in fairness, not just an Al Mohler. They need other men, because if you recall, there were men behind Al Mohler to prop him up, because he couldn't
fact,
have done it single-handedly.
Second part of my point is, Southern Seminary had a denomination whose core membership were conservative and committed to biblical inerrancy, and an entire constituency that were supporting them as they went, you know, away from this sort of liberal drift back to a more conservative stance. Moody is an interdenominational school. There isn't a identifiable body of support constituency that are going to support them as they go, you know, try to recover their conservative roots. It's a very difficult task. We need to pray for Moody Bible Institute, because I frankly wouldn't want the task, and I'm not sure it's even possible.
This is the third scandal, so this would be 3.2, if you will. This was a bit of a shock, I think, to everybody. At the age of 65, Frank Page, who was the executive director, he was the grand poobah of Southern Baptist Convention, the executive committee. He confessed to an indiscretion. That was the term that he used, so we didn't get biblical language, so we don't know what the indiscretion was. He called it a moral failure, and he has stepped down from leadership. Needless to say, that's a big scandal, too. Do you want to comment on that one, Phil Johnson?
No, other than to say it's a bit of a shock, and there's just not enough information to even know what happened or why. Whether that needs to be public or not, I don't know. We're just going to have to defer to the rest of the leadership in the SBC, but it's disappointing and a shock. And another symbol of the fact that we live in an era where this kind of moral failure is epidemic. And I don't think we've seen the end of it. I think it's going to continue to happen. And it should be a reminder to all of us that we need to be diligent in our personal and private lives and be sure your sin will find you out. And John MacArthur always says, truth and time go hand in hand. Actually, I think he says time and truth go hand in hand. The truth always surfaces in the end. And Jesus himself said, whatever you've, you know, whispered in the closet is going to be shouted from the rooftops. You can't keep secret sin secret. And so it behooves us to be repentant and obedient people and keep careful guard over our private lives and our thought lives and honor the Lord in all we do.
I don't know that anybody read that breaking news scandal, reading that this fellow is 65 years old, pastoring a church, all of the things that he fought for evangelistically, theologically, and read of an indiscretion and didn't think of the same Bible verse, which is, take heed lest you too shall fall and find yourself in a scandal.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way.
Have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?